Who's ready to have a relaxed, rational, even-keeled conversation about the Kansas City Royals? Nobody? Okay. After hours here on 96.5, The Fan, Logan Weber here with you. Producer Jacob Mustard is alongside with you for the next 3 hours until 9 o'clock tonight. Don't worry, we're not going to bore you and beat you over the head with more Royals conversation for another 3 hours today. We'll talk about a lot more going on in the sports world. We've got Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight. Shohei Ohtani's back on the mound, an all-star traded in Major League Baseball, a King's Ransom trade for who exactly in the NBA, and so much more to get to here tonight. But let's begin with the Kansas City Royals. Let's try to get as much of this out of the way at the start of the show as we can. They've now lost 9 of their last 10 games after being swept by the Yankees during the course of the week last week and then swept over the weekend by the A's. They've lost 6 in a row in that 9 out of 10 stretch of games. Royals are now a season worst 34-38 on the year. The Royals will be back in action starting tomorrow on the road against the Texas Rangers. It is not a fun time to be a Royals fan. And somebody in the text line just mentioned this, and I had this stat myself earlier today. Royals, we had that stretch in the middle of May, and I recall because it was in the middle of that week where Bink and I were hosting Cody and Gold, because Cody and Alex were off in California for a wedding. And they had played that 4-game series against the White Sox and just killed them, right? At the beginning of that run, they had played the Colorado Rockies and had swept them in a 3-game series. So they were 15-2 during a single stretch from about late April to the midway point of May. Outside of that 17-game stretch, this Royals baseball team is 19-36. 19-36 outside of that hot streak they had in late April through the middle of May. And this just feels, watching this Royals team in the last 2 weeks, they can't do two things well at the same time, right? When it comes to the game of baseball, you can win games with great pitching if your hitting struggles. And you can win games with great hitting if your pitching struggles. But it seems like more often than not, when one is playing well, the other is collapsing. It's just this off, or neither one of them is doing much of anything. The pitching for the Kansas City Royals is worse this month than it has been at any point the entire season. The pitching numbers they back that up. After a team ERA of 3-1 in April, a 3-1-2 in May, the Royals pitching staff has a 4.68 ERA in the month of June. So the pitching isn't holding you up anymore the way that it had been doing in the months of April and May. And the Royals are actually hitting the ball as well in June as they did in the month of May. They have hit .264 so far this month. The problem is, with runners in scoring position, they are in the bottom of baseball. They are nearly, if not exactly, in dead last in Major League Baseball, hitting with runners in scoring position. They have one of the worst slugging percentages in Major League Baseball. And I knew this conversation was coming, and we'll get to it here in just a minute. 913-586-7965 is our number. I'm getting a lot of people commenting about coaching. It's the coaching. What's wrong with the coaching? The whole coaching staff needs to go. And I will say my piece on that in just a minute. But this Royals team is more talented than 34-38. I mean, you cannot, it's hard to fathom being this bad right now after they had that stretch in May where they were 15-2 in a 17 game stretch, including, you know, a couple of bigs. They swept the Rays in that series, in that stretch of games. They took 2 out of 3 against Houston. They beat Baltimore 2 out of 3, which at the time looked good. In hindsight, it looks like that's what they should have done because the Orioles are awful. And now losing 2 out of 3 against the White Sox, getting swept by the A's, I mean, getting swept by the Yankees sucks, but you'll stomach that, I guess, a little bit. But losing five of those other six games in this stretch, losing two to Chicago and all three against a team that doesn't have a home, a team that's playing at a double-A facility and sat, or like a, I don't even know if it's a double-A facility. It might just be like a spring training facility in Sacramento. It's awful. And now you gear up and you go for a six-game road trip, three on the road against the Rangers, three on the road against the San Diego Padres, and then you come back home for a six-game set, three at home against Tampa, who's seven games above 500. Oh, and then who comes to town? Ah, it's just the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's fun. So the Royals now have 12 games against teams that are all 500 or better. This was not the time to start struggling mightily if you're the Kansas City Royals, because this is arguably the toughest 12-game stretch of their entire season coming up here. And then they've got, I mean, even after that, they go on the road for four games against the Mariners. And then they have a series against the Arizona Diamondbacks following that. Their next game against a team that is currently below 500, Jacob, the Royals' next game against a team with a losing record, July 7th against the Pittsburgh Pirates at home. That is 20 plus days that the Royals will go playing teams that, as of this moment, are at exactly 500 or better.
Sounds like they need to figure out what the issue is, and fast.
Well, they tried this players-only meeting after the loss to the Yankees, or after the loss to the A's on Saturday, and it did absolutely nothing. You know, it seems like when the Royals' pitching is really bad, they aren't generating enough hits, and they're still not scoring any runs. The run production is still the issue. As bad as the pitching has been in here in the month of June, the run production is still a major, major problem for this Royals team. You go all the way back to June 5th against the St. Louis Cardinals, right? They are 2-11 or 2-10 in that 12-game, 11-game, 13-game stretch there. The Royals have lost 6-5. They won 7-5, but then you lose 7-2 to the White Sox, 4-1 to the White Sox, 10-2, 6-3, 1-0 against the Yankees, 6-4, 4-0, 3-2. The Royals have been shut out in two of their last four games and have scored more than four runs just three times in their last 13 games. Not good. Not good in the slightest. And Cole Reagans, you've got the situation ongoing with him, with the strain in the shoulder, and now he's seeking a second opinion, which he should get at some point this week. We'll hear what happens. The Royals, as of now, with the diagnosis they have, seem very confident that he will avoid surgery and avoid missing potentially the rest of the year. But it doesn't sound like the Royals are going to get Cole Reagans back anytime soon, or at least in the next few weeks. Which, okay, Michael Lorenzen just stays in the rotation alongside Noah Cameron, and you go with the guys that you had here prior to the Cole Reagans, or, you know, right when the Cole Reagans injury happened. So you don't have to juxtaposition the way that the rotation's working, although you can if you want to, because the rotation's got its fair share of issues as it sits. But I'll get on my soapbox here for a minute, and then we'll try to maybe avoid some Royals conversation for a minute, just to give everybody a breather, give everybody a break before the Royals are back tomorrow against the Rangers. Please stop. Stop it with the fire Matt Quatrero stuff. I'm done. Stop. No. Somebody in the text line just asked, be an honest sports talk show host. Do you think someone should be fired for the Royals' atrocious play this season? There needs to be a change to get their attention. The talk isn't fixing things. No, I don't think anybody needs to get fired. This team lost 106 games 2 years ago. J.J. Piccolo made some home run moves. He signed Michael Wacha and he signed Seth Lugo. Who anticipated those moves working out the way that they did? The trade for Cole Reagans has been an absolute home run since he arrived at the deadline 2 years ago. No, He's stuck with guys like Vinny Pasquantino despite the injury concerns. He's stuck with Mikel Garcia after the second half flop of last season. No, they're just not playing well enough at the moment. It happens. Stop with the fire Matt Quatrero crap. It's ridiculous. He was a finalist for manager of the year in the American League last year with a team nobody expected to be any good. Nobody. They're only four games below 500. Yes, I know. They're in the midst of the worst stretch of their season. No question that they're in the worst stretch of their year. But now's not the time to start firing people. That's a ridiculous thing. Less than 6 months. I mean, not less than 6 months, but 8 months after you just got to the ALDS against the New York Yankees. 8 months after you were one of the eight best teams in baseball, one of the four best teams in the American League. Listen, folks, I was very, very vocal. I was very upfront about the history regarding teams that had these skyrocketing level seasons that nobody expected. Over the course of the history of Major League Baseball, there have only, in like the last 40 years of Major League Baseball, there have only been maybe 13 or 14 teams to go, to have 30 or more wins in comparison to the previous year. 13 or 14 of them. And of those 13 or 14, which included the Kansas City Royals from last year, that included the Baltimore Orioles as well, only like two of them had actually gotten better or had stayed the same as the year prior. This shouldn't be a shocking thing that there's a little bit of a regression from this Kansas City Royals team. Yes, have there been questionable decisions that have been made? Does Matt Quatrero deserve a little bit of fervor from the fan base because he pulled Noah Cameron yesterday after six scoreless innings? Yes. Yeah, he deserves to be you as the fans and we as members of the media, we have every right to be a little bit upset and questioning his decision-making there. Some of the base running decisions. Now, the thing with that is, and I've seen people talk about the base running with this Royals team, that's not always coaching. Sometimes a player themselves might make that decision to try to stretch a single into a late double or a double into a triple, or he might try to tag from second to third base on a given play, whatever the situation calls for. Sometimes that's up to the discretion of the player themselves. There's always going to be questionable decisions that a coach makes. But for to say, you fire him for this one decision or these two decisions. Okay. Matt Quatrero has put this team into a position to compete. Compared to where they were 2 years ago. That's my question for Royals fans. For those that are all up in arms, for those that are saying the sky is falling, for everybody hitting the panic button today, would you rather have this or 2023? Right? I had legitimate people in the text line on Super Bowl Sunday, you know, having similar levels of anguish after losing the Super Bowl. I get that you're losing the Super Bowl, but would you rather have that, or would you rather have the Chiefs in 2012 or 2013? They're in a rough stretch. But no, I do not believe Matt Quatrero should be fired 70 games into the season after winning 86 games a year ago and making it to the ALDS. That's ridiculous, in my opinion. Somebody said that Kauffman would have fired him. Maybe. I mean, that's certainly possible, but good Lord, how long was Mike Matheny in Kansas City before he got the boot? So he got 3 years, never made the playoffs and got the boot. But we're going to give Matt Quatrero two and not even quite a half a season with a playoff berth, and we're going to fire him. I get you being upset, but let's not be ridiculous here. Everybody take a beat. Anybody who thought this Royals team was going to be a 90 or a 95 win baseball team, you were kidding yourself. I said the ceiling was 86 to 88 wins. I said that 2 months ago, 86 to 88 wins. And I've never strayed from that being the ceiling of this team. I think it's closer to an 80 or 82 win ball club. Regression is an expectation. This team cannot hit with runners in scoring position. And how much of that is a coaching thing? They're hitting 250 as a team. They're in the top 10 of Major League Baseball in batting average. The problem is they can't hit the dang ball when there's a runner on second or third. When they have an opportunity to drive in runs, they can't get it done. And I don't know how is that a coaching issue? Let's look at the players first. Let's look at some injury concerns that this Royals team has this year compared to what they had last year, right? Seth Lugo stayed healthy all year last year. Cole Reagan stayed healthy all year last year. Lucas Ersig, healthy when he came to Kansas City from the A's. Not the case this year. You got a lot more injury concerns you're having to juggle than you did a season ago. Things happen, man. Things happen. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll take a look at the text line, maybe answer a few more questions that are in there, and take a look at some other things in the other areas and realms of the sports world. We've got some NBA news, more news in Major League Baseball, a couple of Chiefs storylines that I want to get to here in just a little bit as well. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber here with you. Producer Jacob Mustard is alongside. Right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. I don't claim to be an expert when it comes to the little intricacies of the game of baseball. Right, I played baseball for most of my childhood, always enjoyed playing baseball, and know quite a bit about the game, but I mean, there's something head scratching about this Royals baseball team. So right now, right, they're hitting 250. That is their team batting average on the year. That is 13th in Major League Baseball. They are hitting 224 with runners in scoring position, meaning runners on second and third, for those that maybe don't follow baseball as closely, which is 26th in Major League Baseball. 13th in batting average, but they are 26th with runners in scoring position. That's fifth worst in Major League Baseball. Fifth worst in the league. How does that change? Like, how is your team 30 points nearly worse when there's just a runner on first or nobody on versus a runner on second and or third? I think it could be a multifaceted thing. Number one, I think it can be the individual player or team's approach at the plate. I think it can be the pitcher's approach on the mound, right? When you're facing a starting pitcher and he pitches out of the windup more often than not, and somebody gets on second or third or whatever, you know, you get a guy on base and all of a sudden the guy's pitching out of the stretch. Maybe his arm angle is slightly different. At least the way that he goes about a pitch by pitch is different. Obviously, going from the windup to the stretch is drastically different. So maybe that has changed things. I don't know, man. But I have a hard time when I look at a team like the Kansas City Royals being 13th in Major League Baseball in batting average and saying, oh, the hitting coach needs to go because they can't hit. They're in the top half of baseball in batting average, right? Oh, the pitching is terrible. The pitching, something's wrong with the pitching. They have the sixth best team ERA in baseball too. They just do not hit with runners on the bases. And I cannot tell you why. And I think the other problem with this Royals team, and I'm not sure it's got much to do with coaching. Again, I like the way that this Royals team is constructed, but it's been the one conversation we've continued to have over and over and over and over again, and they've tried to make some things happen, right? They signed Mark Canha, and they've put him in the lineup, but his power numbers are nowhere to be found. Bobby's power numbers are down. Salvi's power numbers are down. Jack Caglione has been called up and has played in four complete series with this Royals team and has still yet to hit his first home run. They're dead last in Major League Baseball with 46 home runs. The Colorado Rockies have 15 more home runs than the Royals do. They have 46 long balls this year compared to the Dodgers, who are the Major League leader in home runs, 112. There are five teams in Major League Baseball that have twice as many home runs as the Royals do. Not great, folks. So you're not hitting the long ball. So you're not driving in runs with power, right? This team plays with batting average and speed on the base paths. They get guys on. It's a small ball kind of a lineup. And when you're playing for average and you've got a team that has guys really hitting well for average and other guys really struggling, as we continue to see Michael Massey just hang around for some reason, you know, Salvi's hitting 230, but you've also got guys like Drew Waters and Kyle Isbell hitting up over 260. Vinny Pasquantino is quietly approaching 280 now on the year after he was the American League Player of the Month in May and is hitting up over 360 in June. Mikel Garcia is hitting like a top 10 player in baseball, at least in terms of batting average. Just feels like with this Royals team, like when it's bad, it's all bad, and it's all bad at the same time. It's just this amalgamation of things hitting this Royals baseball team all at once that's causing issues. But I'm not willing to be one to hit the panic button. I'm just not. Somebody says it's a coaching thing when their approach at the plate is terrible. But is it terrible? They're top half of the league in batting average. Yes, they're having trouble hitting with runners in scoring position. But I don't see where the hitting coach is doing things wrong. Right now, the Royals are on pace to have their first team batting average over 250 in 10 years. They just can't hit with runners on second, third. Don't know why that is. Somebody else in the text line, a 785, says, you don't fire a manager with a team full of young guys that he is trying to develop. Yeah, the offense has hit a snag. Stuff happens. The leaders have owned it that they haven't been leading. Do they need to make some moves by the trade deadline for a couple of bats? Probably so. Firing Q will not change anything. It will only make things worse. They'll get an interim manager that has no chemistry with this team. I'm not willing to be that person that's going to push and advocate for the firing of a coach. I think that's way too soon. Way too soon to move right now, man. Let's continue to see what happens. Again, it's the middle of June. They still have 90 games left. Who knows, man? The Royals might win 5 out of 6 this weekend. And then all of a sudden, they're right back at 500, and everybody is breathing again instead of this constant strain and living and die. I don't know what it is, man, about Major League Baseball. People live and die with every single game, every single result. It's 162 of them. If they're 4 games below 500 in September, I'll panic. Late August, mid-August, even early August, I'll panic. 4 games under in June is where you want to be? Absolutely not. It's not where you want to be. But they could be in a lot worse positions. I think everybody just needs to breathe for a second. See where everything goes. See what the next week or two looks like. And if the struggles continue, if they are sitting at 5 or 6 or 7 games below 500, we can have this conversation again. But I'm sorry, firing Matt Quatrero 70 games into the season, is not going to suddenly light a fire under this Royals baseball team. In fact, it's likely to do the opposite. Because the players on this roster, the players in that clubhouse, seem to have a lot of respect and admiration for Matt Quatrero. Firing a guy like that after taking you to the playoffs, coming off a 106 loss season, just seems asinine in my opinion. 913-586-7965 is our number. We've got a couple more stories out of Major League Baseball that aren't Royals related that I want to get to next, including a massive trade, and we got a guy back on the bump pitching that we haven't seen pitch in over a year. We'll talk about that next right here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard on 96.5 The Fan. All right, I got one more thing to say before we bypass some Royals conversation for a little bit. I mentioned earlier that there have only been a few examples of a team in Major League Baseball winning 30 or more games year over year. It doesn't happen often. There have been 14 teams since 1969 to win 27 or more games year over year. Of those 14, just two of them actually saw their records improve again for that second consecutive season. The Royals became the 15th team since 1969 to do this. Some of the other examples, the 1999 Diamondbacks, who went from 65 wins in 98 to 100 wins in 1999. That was the addition of Randy Johnson and Luis Gonzalez to that Diamondbacks team. They won 35 games year over year. In 2000, they went 85 and 77. So from 65 to 100 to 85. So 15 games worse in 2000 after winning 35 more games in 99. The 89 Orioles won 54 games in 88. They won 87 games in 1989. And then in 1990, after winning 87 games, they won 76. They finished 11 games worse than they had the prior year. The 2022 Orioles went from 52 wins in 21 to 83 wins, and then they won 101 games in 2023. They are one of only two teams that has improved three consecutive seasons after winning 30 or more games. 2008 Rays won 97 games after only winning 66 in 07, and then won only 84 games in 2009. The 93 Giants went from 72 wins to 103 wins. And then in 1994, they went 55 and 60 before the strike. So they were well on their way to having a much worse season than they had the year prior. And then you have the Kansas City Royals from last year, going from 56 wins to 86 wins. And the list goes on and on. 2011 Diamondbacks, from 65 wins to 94, down to 81 in 2012. The 03, 04, 05 Tigers, 43 wins in 2003, 72 in 04, and then 71 in 2005. When a team has a this absolutely insane year-over-year progression, traditionally speaking, if you look into the history of Major League Baseball, it doesn't hold up. I don't think anybody should be surprised that the Royals are struggling right now. Just my opinion. I will say, I wasn't necessarily shocked that it happened, but maybe shocked about the timing of it. Huge news in Major League Baseball. As the Boston Red Sox ship Rafael Devers to the New York Giants. I say that I'm not surprised that this has happened. I'm just surprised by the timing of it, right? We it's well documented. Everybody who's paid any attention to Major League Baseball this year has heard about the turmoil between Rafael Devers and the Boston Red Sox. To go from, right, Rafael Devers is one of, I would say, the best hitters, outright hitters in Major League Baseball. He's hitting 270 this year. He's a career 280 hitter, nearly. And he's been one of the most consistent bats in Major League Baseball. But the controversy and the turmoil, as I called it earlier, began during the offseason. Devers, who has been primarily a third baseman in his entire career with Boston, the Red Sox signed Alex Bregman in the offseason. And it's like, okay, well, how is this going to work? Devers, you know, expressed his frustration, I guess is how I would describe it, as a guy who plays third base. You're signing a third baseman. I don't understand that. Okay, well, I guess I'll DH. He kind of just succumbed and said, okay, I'll DH. Well, then they have an injury at first base, and they then try to convince Devers to play first base. And Devers kind of throws a fit, is sort of the best way I can describe it, and says, no, I don't want to play first base. Okay. Well, then Bregman gets hurt, and it's like, I'm a DH. I don't really want to play third either. So it just, there was a lot of contention, I guess you could say, a lot of contention between the Red Sox and Rafael Devers, and so you kind of felt like Boston could be willing to move on from him. I just didn't expect it to be in the middle of June, and I didn't expect it to be when the Royal Red Sox are in the midst of possibly their best baseball of the year. So they complete a sweep, and then they trade Rafael Devers. So the Red Sox will get Kyle Harrison, Jordan Hicks, and two prospects back in return. James Tibbs III, who is an outfielder, and a right-handed pitcher, Jose Bello, who is right now pitching in rookie league, I guess, for San Francisco. The Giants are also going to be covering the over $250 million that remain on Rafael Devers' contract. I'm not surprised that the Red Sox moved on from Rafael Devers. Not after everything that went on between the two. You could tell that the relationship was pretty strained, and I don't know if it was ever going to be able to be corrected. And this coincides with just how the Red Sox seem to be, I don't know if it's the way they are operating, but certainly something there has to be questions. Like, what is going on with the Boston Red Sox? Because this is an organization that at one point, like, you have had, in the last 10 years, you have had downright superstars on your team. You have had Chris Sale. You have had Xander Bogaerts. You have had Rafael Devers. And you have had Mookie Betts. All four of whom are still playing Major League Baseball, none of whom are on your team now. What is going on? Chris Sale wanted out. Mookie Betts demanded a trade. Rafael Devers gets dealt away. Xander Bogaerts opted out of his contract with the Red Sox so that he could hit free agency and go sign with the San Diego Padres. This is supposed to be one of the five, I don't think that's arguable, five biggest organizations and brands in baseball. And not only are you no longer hitting on, like, big name free agents anymore, I mean, I guess Bregman was a pretty big name, so maybe that's too far to go. But you can't keep your big time prospects around anymore. Mookie Betts was an MVP in the American League, top five player in baseball, and he wanted nothing to do with the Red Sox organization any longer. Xander Bogaerts was a great player, all-star caliber player with the Boston Red Sox, who was still under contract. And said, no, I'm out. I'm done. And now you've got Rafael Devers, another multi-time all-star who you created this situation with the signing of Alex Bregman. I cannot figure out what it is, but something strange is happening in Boston for this to continue to be happening. Somebody asked in the text line, what do you think the Red Sox will do now that they've given up that contract? I have no idea. Continue to try to pick up big-time free agents? I don't know what their solution is this year, right? They have a winning record, but they're fourth in their own division. The Blue Jays are 500. The Rays are 500, playing well above their weight class right now, which nobody really saw coming. And then you've still got the New York Yankees, who are getting healthier. Giancarlo Stanton has been activated off the IL, and we could talk about that a little bit later on. I think the Red Sox may be seeing the writing on the wall a little bit, and maybe that's why we saw them have this willingness to call up some of their top prospects in Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony. I don't know what they do with it. Somebody said, do they extend Jaron Duren or do they ship him too? Probably ship him, because that just seems to be what the Red Sox do now. And you know, my initial answer when that person asked, what do you think the Red Sox will do now that they've given up that contract? Is I said they'll find another superstar that they can either trade or let walk in another 5 or 6 years, because that's just what the Red Sox are doing now. I don't get it. I really don't. They have had some big-time guys, some big-time prospects, big-time players come through their system that have just gone elsewhere. They don't want to stick around. Something strange has happened in Boston. One more Major League Baseball story that I want to get to here, and we'll do it on the other side of the break. Shohei Ohtani back in the news, but for two reasons that do not involve him at the plate. We'll talk about that next right here on After Hours. Jacob Mustard producing, Logan Weber here on the mic hosting tonight's program with you till 9 o'clock tonight on 96.5 The Fan. I guess for anybody that's interested in staying up until 9 o'clock Central Time on a Monday night and staying around till, I don't know, close to midnight, Shohei Ohtani is going to be back on the bump tonight. He's going to be the starting pitcher for the Dodgers in Los Angeles against the San Diego Padres. Shohei has not pitched in over a year, not since he had that arm injury. But he's been doing, you know, live BP and things like that. He had a, UCL tear 21 months ago. He's only expected to throw an inning or two, depending on, you know, how he does and how he responds to it, as a continuation of his rehab. But it sounds like Shohei Ohtani could very, very soon see himself back in a starting pitching rotation, this for the first time with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He threw 44 pitches over the course of three simulated innings at Petco in San Diego. This was last Tuesday. But yeah, Shohei Ohtani, he's going to be back as a starting pitcher and continuing just the historic things that he has done during his time in Major League Baseball. He is already the National League's leader for All-Star voting. He is third in Major League Baseball, or tied for second, I guess you could say, with 25 home runs this year. He's hitting .297 with 41 RBIs. His on-base percentage is at .393. And now we might see Shohei Ohtani back as a starting pitcher once again. Aaron Judge, no surprise to anybody, is leading on the American League side. But that's only one of two stories surrounding Shohei Ohtani that are in the news today. So as Ohtani makes his return to the starting pitching mound in Major League Baseball, his former interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, is now in federal prison. According to Tisha Thompson of ESPN, Mizuhara turned himself in to a federal penitentiary in Pennsylvania today. He is in custody at the Federal Corrections Institute, Allenwood Low, which is a low-security facility to serve a 57-month prison sentence for stealing nearly $17 million from Ohtani. Now, the whole thing started because of a ESPN investigation revealed that he had sent millions of dollars, millions from Ohtani's account to an illegal bookmaker via wire transfer. So he was sports betting and had accumulated over $40 million in debt after placing over 19,000 bets. That is an insane amount of money. He pleaded guilty to bank fraud and for filing a false tax return in June of last year. He pleaded guilty in August. This was the bookmaker, I should say. Matthew Boyer pleaded guilty in August to running an illegal gambling business, money laundering, and subscribing a false tax return. He is still awaiting sentencing almost a year later. So yeah, big day for Shohei Ohtani. You are pitching in a live game for the first time in almost 2 years after Tommy John surgery. And your former interpreter, and at one point, one of, if not your closest friend in the world, closest confidant, is going to prison for stealing almost $20 million from you in sports betting with it. Okie dokie. Talking about, somebody said it was definitely Ohtani betting as well. Well, the court did not determine that. The investigation showed no wrongdoing from Shohei Ohtani, so pure speculation on your part. Talking about earlier, we were talking about Rafael Devers getting traded away and to the Giants. And so what are the Red Sox going to do next? Somebody says Duren would look beautiful in royal blue. I don't see that happening. Jaron Duren was an all-star last year. He's hitting up over 260 this year. They're only paying him like $3 million this season. And his club option for next year is only $8 million. So I think it's very unlikely that the Red Sox would let a player like that walk away when they have another year of team control at their disposal for only $8 million, which is a steal at that point. Speaking of a steal, a fleece, whatever you want to call it, what in the hell are the Orlando Magic doing? I want to talk about this. Because I don't think there's any way in the world that Desmond Bane was worth the price tag that the Orlando Magic paid the Memphis Grizzlies for. The Memphis Grizzlies. It makes no sense to me at all. I know that there's not a lot of NBA in this area, but I have to talk about it because I think the Orlando Magic pulled off one of the most foolish trades in the last 15 years of the NBA, and that's saying a lot. Because there have been some very, very foolish ones. We'll talk about that in hour number two of After Hours coming your way next. Logan Weber here with you. Jacob Mustard, our producer, alongside. This is 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.